Well, Jules, that was a tough one to swallow. George Springer, the bullpen, all getting the receiving end of some tough moments tonight. So Springer getting hosed at the plate when it comes to getting squeezed on calls. And then in what ended up being one of the game's biggest moment, can't make the catch on a Jesse Winker frozen rope off the outfield fence. He crashes hard into that chain link fence, taken out of the game on a play that ties the game in the eighth inning. The bullpen, just generally speaking, from the moment Jimmy Garcia entered this game to the sack fly from off of Hoffman's pitch, just did not look good. 3-2 loss. Not only drop this game, unfortunately, but to drop the series overall.
Yeah, tough way to lose, show. I think that's kind of the taste that it leaves, right? Especially when you have Chris Bassitt pitching the type of game that he did. It's tough not to look at this one and think that he deserved a better fate. He was really, really giving you everything that you could have asked for. It was a very chilly night, obviously, in New York. And so you kind of see not just the Blue Jays relievers, but the Mets relievers as well coming in and struggling to command the baseball. And it does make sense. The difference is that one of those teams capitalized on the mistakes and the other one didn't. So definitely tough show. We are starting to see a few trends that are concerning for sure. We're starting to see a little bit of, obviously the starting rotation has been consistent to start the year. But if you don't get the big hits and the big moments, it's going to end in heartbreak like it did tonight.
That is Julia Kreutz. I'm Sho Ali. You're listening to Jays Talk live on the Sportsnet Radio Network. We're also streaming on sportsnet.ca and on the Sportsnet app. You can give us a call, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. You can text us as well. Lots of text on the text line, 590-590, name and location. The people's text line always open. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. Yeah, I feel like the place to start in this game is either Springer or the bullpen. I think the bullpen, given how this game continued to go even after Jesse Winker's game-tying hit, is where I want to start with you, Jules. So a little dicey from old Jimmy in the seventh inning,
yeah.
Right? Bassitt's runner gets aboard and then a hit and a walk before Jimmy gets the out himself on Starling Marte, his former teammate. Brendan Little in the eighth, really grinding. Like, he grinding through that,
yeah,
that entire inning. And then he, of course, ends it with him letting up the game-tying hit to Winker. And, of course, that comes after both Lindor and Soto reach six straight balls from the time Lindor gets to the plate to midway through the Soto plate appearance. Plate appearance. And it was just, it was a tough watch because, after we get Sandlin afterwards, after, of course, Springer crashes into the fence, and then you get Jeff Hoffman in the end. And look, I understand how, because of the chance for a save, the usage of Sandlin, Hoffman, if this game went to extras. But I feel like it goes all the way back to Bassitt being taken out of the game. And we can talk about Bassitt a little later on if you want, because to your point, I also agree that he deserved a far, far, far better fate. I honestly think this very well might be maybe the one of the three best starts he's had as a Blue Jay,
seriously.
Honestly. Like, he was really, really good tonight and deserved a far, far better fate. But I don't know, you could have, he was cruising. Like, I understand lefty coming up to the plate, you get one run, you're only up by two runs. I understand in theory the idea of taking him out, but he was cruising. Like, I think for me, it actually all goes all the way back to taking Bassitt out of the game. Even at what, 92 pitches?
Yeah.
I think I would have left him in there.
It's not even like he was at 100,
right,
or whatever.
Yeah.
And we have seen him push past that limit a lot. And you're right, Sho. He was dealing. He was warm, which is just as important as being hot on a night like this. And he had found a ton of success against the Mets hitters. It's every time a Met hitter came up to bat, it looked like they really did not know what to expect from Chris Bassitt. Just the pitch sequencing and the pitch mix and the choices that he was making was really just baffling hitters, freezing them at times, causing some awkward swings at other times. And if that is if that is who you have on the mound, if that's how things are going, then why not keep him in? I understand that Jimmy Garcia is, you know, as trusted a reliever as you will find in baseball right now, but so is Chris Bassitt, and he deserved that last out. So in the same way that Jimmy Garcia perhaps deserved a clean inning, and maybe that changes how you use your bullpen a little bit if you let Bassitt just get that final out. Now, but just before that runner got aboard there, Sho, you and I were talking about the possibility of Chris Bassitt coming back out to pitch in the eighth.
Right.
Get an out or two in the eighth inning, depending on how things went. And obviously, as soon as he lets that runner reach, it kind of just, that point becomes moot. But it felt like that seventh inning was his to finish. It didn't work out that way. And, you know, the bullpen did what it did after that. But again, Sho, it kind of comes back to the offense, right? Right now, there's no way that we are going to talk about these losses, especially these close losses, without talking about the fact that the Blue Jays are not getting the big hits when it matters. And if that continues to be the case, it doesn't matter much how good your starter is. It doesn't matter much that, because honestly, the bullpen was allowed zero mistakes in this game. And, well, they're not going to be perfect every single time.
Yeah, when it's cold and rainy, I think we often give the offense a pass. But I can't give them a pass tonight, given that, I mean, Griffin Canning, first of all, because I think the Mets bullpen was good to all right to good, I would say, tonight. Even Edwin Diaz has some troubling moments in this one. I mean, this is a guy who, again, prior to his injury, was pretty much the best closer in all of baseball. And he made the pitches when it counted today. But Griffin Canning just did not look particularly impressive tonight. I mean, not a lot of velo. His command looked very spotty. The guy was about like around 80 pitches in the fourth inning. And because of all that, you figure the offense would have had way more opportunities than they did. I mean, the top of the fifth inning, Rodon gets a ball through the infield as the first batter up. The order turns over for Bovladi Santander, and I turned to you in the studio here, and I said, they have to score here. Like, it is an absolute must. You can't draw this about better. A runner on and nobody out for the top of the order. So Bo gets on with a hit that chases Griffin Canning. Two on, nobody out. Vladdy, with a great piece of hitting, kind of shortens up on the swing to chop it for an RBI single. But then Santander flies out. His struggle to start the year continue. Kirk strikes out. Springer can't catch a break with the umpire. And I mean, there's a text here from, I think it's from Joe in London, saying, I'm ready for the ABS in the majors now, please. If there was ever a game that would sell you on that, it's this game, because the home plate umpire, I mean, he was terrible for both teams tonight. I think that it probably did even out towards the end, but good God, it was awful tonight. And I think that's in that same moment I'm talking about, when Springer comes up with the bases loaded, I mean, you know, he's probably swinging at least in part at some of the pitches that are borderline, because he's just not sure what's going to get called a ball or a strike. And yeah, they get the double from Bo in the sixth inning off Buto. But I mean, there's another moment in the top of the ninth inning where they get two runners on off of Edwin Diaz, of all people.
Part of the lineup at bats.
And then you get Santander swinging at awful pitches.
Awful.
And then Jimenez one baffled me, I think, too, because Jimenez, like, literally, what, a pitch or two pitches before he strikes out, Diaz hooks a pitch literally behind his ankles, and then the pitch he strikes out on ends up being, what, like, well, I think that pitch was a ball the entire time,
the
hand. Like, I know sometimes you can get confused with the release points and so on. That was at no point from the time Diaz reared back his hand was that pitch anything but a ball, and Jimenez had an ugly swing and miss to end that inning. I think the bullpen will wear it 1,000%. John Schneider, I think, will wear it to a certain extent as well for not letting Bassett finish that seventh inning of work. But the offense has got to wear this at least a little bit.
Yeah, and again, Show, it's starting to become a trend that we are pretty familiar with. We saw this a lot last year, this offense just being incapable. First of all, one extra base hit all game long. The Blue Jays actually had more hits than the Mets, but when all you get... I'm sorry, there were two extra bases. It was a double from Bichette and a double from Allen Rodon. But with that is all you're getting out of 10 hits in the game. I'm sorry. If you're counting on small ball and if you're counting on every single little detail going right for you to eke out a win, especially on the road, hostile environment, Show, we could hear the fans really getting into it, especially after that game was tied. You need the big bats in that lineup to really come through. And I don't mean come through with an RBI single like Vladdy did and a pitch that's out of the zone. And that's even questionable if he should be swinging at that because he didn't have even two strikes on him. So he had a strike to give. It was not a pitch that looked particularly close. He got the RBI single out of it because he is a very, very good hitter. But the fact of the matter is that is not his pitch. That is not a pitch that he is looking for to drive. And until that approach gets a little bit cleaned up and the Blue Jays can actually start getting those home runs, those separators, those difference makers that make this game. There were so many chances here, Sho, for the Blue Jays to actually blow this game up and allow John Schneider to be a little more flexible with his usage of the bullpen and maybe even chase a guy like Edwin Diaz out of the game because it's too far to reach at that point, but just unable to capitalize. And until this top of the order starts producing with more consistency, Sho, I'm afraid that we're going to be having a lot of the same conversations that we did last year. And that is, there was hope there at one point that we were past that. Just doesn't seem like we are just yet.
Richard in Bowmanville on the text line saying, different names, same results, great starting pitching, no offense. I think to your point, Jules, that's what makes it feel so familiar, so hard to disagree. The text here from, actually there's no name on this one, but this one just says, managers won't win you many games, but they can lose them for you. Pitching decisions in the eighth inning should get someone fired. A lot of people against John Schneider in this one. John Schneider is not a big league manager. Jimmy throws 10 pitches. They put little in the game against the three best hitters. Again, Andrew from Brampton, Young from London. Bullpen management is questionable. Why take Bassett out after giving up one single and bottom of the order coming up? Leave Garcia for the eight. Bassett was dealing only through 80-something pitches, well, 90-something pitches. Another head scratcher. Yeah, like I think it's a decision making process that snowballed all the way to Jesse Winker's hit, Springer crashing into the wall. Hoffman having to come in a really untenable situation where a sack fly ended the game, essentially. So, yeah, that's a tough look. Let's go to the phone lines. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Guy in Maple. Guy, what's up? Welcome to JSTOC.
Hey, guys. Yeah, you guys are bang on. So are the texters. I mean, Schneider costs us about 10 games a year on his decisions. And let me tell you, the first thing he's got to do, you know, in the middle of your five hole, you don't have your slowest, weakest player batting fifth. Like, how nice would a Rodon and Wagner look in that five hole when you need a sacrifice fly or a guy to make contact? These guys have shown earlier that, and they've proven that, you know, they can handle that. Kirk's been like this the last 3 years. I don't know why he's even batting in the top five. He's got to be batting eighth. Like, you don't want this guy hitting when your top players are getting on base, albeit it doesn't happen very often lately, and you know. But in that scenario, a sack fly, something, you know, this guy just doesn't do it. And then the management of the bullpen. I mean, let's count the mistakes. I mean, you guys hit it right on. Leave Bassett in there. He deserves to see one more hitter. He gives up another hit or whatever. Okay, take him out. Then what do? You bring in Little, who's your fifth option as far as your best pitching. Facing the top three hitters, that's when you need to bring in Hoffman. You know, you don't have to bring in Hoffman in the ninth inning. You bring him in when the top hitters are coming in. So he blew that one. And then in the ninth inning, you go to Chad Green. You don't let Sandlin pitch in the ninth inning. He's not your typical strikeout pitcher. Green's a little bit better, but let's face it. Who's your second best pitcher in your bullpen? I would guess it's Green, isn't it? You got Green and Garcia. Behind Hoffman. And this guy, Schneider, this is the second game he's cost us now. And hear me out. The game against Baltimore, I think it was the third game of the year, he brings in Lovelady, who was your last option, but they bring him in first. He had all these control issues. He hit two batters. Most important at bat of the game was Urias, the nine hitter, and that was the turning point of the game. He gives up a 3-run double, game loss. Any other manager, I think this team is 7-2. I'll hang up and listen, and have a great weekend.
Hey, Guy, thanks for the call. Welcome back to Jays Talk, and appreciate you calling in. So we talk about the bullpen, and we'll continue talking about the bullpen, but I do want to get to what Guy said at the beginning of the call about where Kirk is hitting vis-a-vis the rest of the order, because it's funny, I was ready to have maybe even before the game, honestly, I was ready to hear this, but then in this game, it kind of was exemplified again, and there was that moment where it kind of looked like briefly Kirk beat out the double play, and then they reviewed it, and he just clearly did not, and that ends the inning, and I was ready to have the Springer should be batting above Kirk in the lineup discussion, and maybe depending, you know, maybe if Kirk's batting sixth or seventh, I think I'm fine with that, maybe sixth even, because it's so early in the season, but at the very least, because Springer was hitting so well. I mean, coming into this game, the guy was batting .440 on the season. And then you get not only, I mean, he looked frustrated, generally speaking, because of how the strike zone was going for him. And I don't blame him because I mean, after it happened twice, you could see the cameras caught him on the field being like, again, again. So he clearly was not happy. And then he was taking some hacks he probably wouldn't have taken. And then on top of that, the misplays in the field also, right? Which I'm sure the wet field didn't help, but I again, honestly, I don't care. I know he's a little older, the back end of his career. I know it's cold and it's damp. He's still got to make those plays, truthfully. But at this point now, I mean, lower back spasms from John Schneider is what the diagnosis is on Springer. So that tends to lead me to believe, Jules, that he is probably okay. Like, he probably won't have to have an extended stint on the IL, for example, even if he does miss like a game or two. But if he does have to miss an extended period of time, I wonder if that's the impetus they need. Because, again, lack of power, I kind of wonder if it's going to be Addison Barger who finally gets a call-up because he can obviously play right field. But I don't know. I wonder what they do with Springer if he does have to miss any time at all.
Yeah, that was such a weird play show. It looked like a misplay all the way.
Yeah.
First of all, it looked like a home run. It looked like it was going to leave the ballpark. It didn't, but it was just clear that either he mistimed it or he miscalculated how far away from the fence he actually was. Can't come up with the ball, hits the fence, and just a weird play. I do think that the Blue Jays seem to have avoided something a little bit more serious, but if you ask me, Sho, it's about time we see Addison Barger here, regardless of what happens to Springer. When you look at the way that things are going and the need that the Blue Jays have right now for some pop, and the way that Barger is hitting to start the campaign in AAA, it seems like a no-brainer. And you don't even have to, you know, really think too hard about roster moves or an IL stint when you have a Davis Schneider who unfortunately has not done much this season, has not found his swing at all to start the year. And so it seems like that move should have been made already, honestly, in my opinion. But that has nothing to do with Springer or anyone needing an IL stint. It's just you see the necessity of this team right now, and you have a guy in AAA who can potentially provide you with that. And I understand that the Blue Jays are concerned with, you know, playing time and giving someone like Barger regular at-bats and all of that. But here's the thing. If he hits, he'll stay in the lineup. And that is a win-win, if you ask me. So, it's a tough one. Tough to see, obviously, Springer leave like that, especially with the way that he has been hitting. But there's a clear need right now, and the Blue Jays need to do something to address it.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones. Let's go to Hamza here in Toronto. Hamza, what's on your mind? Welcome to Jays Talk. Hi, Hamza, you still there? One more time for Hamza.
Hamza.
Is that you?
Hamza? How about Zach?
All right, sure. You know what? Let's take Zach. What's up? What's on your mind, Zach?
Well, there we go. Thanks.
What's on your mind, Zach? Welcome to J-Stock.
Oh, great. Thanks. I want to talk about Chris Bassitt.
Sure.
I love his model of consistency. Like, you can have him as your number three starter. And like you were saying earlier, he's almost like a reliever at the same time, you know, with the number of pitches that he can throw. And his veteran leadership, I love. So, and the Addison Barger?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think, obviously, he should be called up.
Well, Zach, not Hamza, thank you for the call. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk. Yeah, I mean, look, we didn't really get to the you know, pressure moments that Bassitt really pitched through. I mean, there was a great moment in the bottom of the fourth where Bassitt like gets something in his eye and Jose Ministral comes out to take like the eyelash or whatever it was out of his eyeball. And then a minute later, he strikes out Mark Vientos. And this coming after Springer, again, talking about some tough moments from Springer in the field tonight, botches what would have been a single hit right to him in right field. And then it just goes right, skips right past him all the way to the wall for a Jesse Winker triple. I mean, great stuff from Bassitt to hold the runner at third and then gets the strikeout. And then the fifth inning with the guy, there was like a guy, a fan who gets on the field.
Yeah.
And then he'd already struck out two guys and he looked so unhappy that his rhythm was being somewhat disrupted by like something that had nothing to do with the actual game. So there's a bit of a delay, and then he throws a pitch that was way outside. Then there's a pitch comm delay, some kind of pitch comm issue, and then he just goes back up there and gets the strike. Like, he was so, so good tonight. Like, the sinker was amazing. He was mowing down Mets batters. I mean, he had 9 strikeouts in the first 5 innings, and he still went 6 2/3. So I felt bad, because no matter how you view Bassett in terms of, like, because we often talk sometimes that Bassett is like a third, you know, I know your spot in the starting rotation doesn't really matter technically, but let's call him like the perfect third pitcher in an order, even though that is who he is at this stage of his career. Sometimes he almost like masquerades as a two when he does he's doing tonight, especially because he's not exactly throwing the balls incredibly hard and gets by on guile and deception, it feels like, but he was doing whatever he wanted tonight.
That's exactly it, Cho. It's the fact that when you have so many assets at your disposal, so many pitches that you can pull out at any time, and it seems like, you know, you can actually do it at any time, at any count. And obviously we have seen Bassett be very cognizant, very conscious about how he is attacking hitters at any given point, depending on the situation. But the fact of the matter is that the Mets never knew what was coming. And there were a few times in this game, Show, where Bassett actually clearly missed his spot, but he missed so well that it ended up just freezing hitters anyway, right? So the sinker was moving, the cutter was cutting, the curveball looked amazing, just as good as it has, and it's kind of like you go back and forth on who is the ace of this rotation. Is it Jose Berríos? Is it Kevin Gausman? But do not sleep on Chris Bassett and what he's doing to start the year.
Chris Bassett going 6 2/3. Unfortunately, the bullpen did not allow for him to get the win tonight. Let's go back to the phones, Jules, before we take a break. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go to Josh in Beaverton. Josh, welcome to Jays Talk. What's on your mind?
Hey, guys. Sounds like we're all on the same page tonight. Yeah, we can debate, I guess, whether, you know, Schneider should take Bassett out or not. But like you said, we went to one of the most trusted relief arms in the game with Yimi, but I don't understand why then with the heart of the Mets order, we bring up Little over, you know, Green or even Sandlin. I mean, if the only reason is because Little's a lefty, I don't know. I can't support that. And I really have a tough time understanding that, especially when you add in the weather. You know, all the pitchers are having command issues tonight. And then you're bringing up Little, who's not a lot of experience, and you put him up against one of the best hitters in the game. It's I don't know. It's just, It's tough to not put this one on the decision-making tonight.
Let me ask you this, Josh. Before you go, Josh, let me ask you this real quick, because we've gotten a couple of texts about Chad Green tonight that I haven't gotten to yet, but like, what is your level of confidence in Chad Green? Because I think a lot of people are kind of up and down on the guy. I'm just curious what you think.
I have more confidence in him over Little,
sure,
to put it that way. He's been in the majors for quite some time. Even Sandlin, to be honest. I mean, I get it. We need a lefty in the pen, but you don't put up, really a rookie lefty against, you know, Soto and Alonso. I'd rather go out on my shield with Green or even Sandlin as opposed to Little tonight. And that's no offense to Little. It's just big moment in the game. It's cold. It's wet. You got to go with your more veteran arms in the pen.
Josh, appreciate the call. Thanks for joining us here on Jays Talk, man. Yeah, I think the only reason I ask that, Jules, is because I like to talk about the circle of trust, and it does feel like on a night like tonight, it's hard to feel like the circle of trust is particularly large, right?
Yeah.
It feels pretty small on nights like tonight. But I go back and forth on whether or not I think Chad Green is the answer, at least or like a major part of the circle of trust, I suppose, just because, you know, some of the advanced statistics for, and this was the case last year too, but I think for me, I looked past it because it felt like Chad Green was pitching out of like position, quote unquote. Like, he wasn't, you know, I don't necessarily want him to be the closer, but if he's the setup guy or maybe even the guy in the seventh inning guy, I think I'd be okay with that. But I don't want him pitching in the highest leverage situations, even if he could be like a middle inning reliever to hold scores to get it to the highest leverage guys in the end. And last year there almost was no choice, right? Because they not only did they not bolster the bullpen, they actively subtracted from the bullpen at the trade deadline. So, you know, last year was what it was, but this year I kind of thought, all right, like maybe he could be trusted in higher leverage situations. We haven't really seen that level of trust in Chad Green so far this year. Like, they seem more, to Josh's point, they seem more willing to go to the Brendan Littles of the world. And again, that the handedness of the batter and the pitcher come into play there. But they seem more willing to go to Little, Fluharty, even certainly Jimmy Garcia, but even like Nick Sandlin, for example. They seem far more willing to go to them over Chad Green.
Let me put it this way. At the spot where Little entered the game, I would not have gone to Chad Green, right. I don't believe that he has done enough this season, or frankly in the latter part of last season, to yield that level of trust in high leverage spots. This is obviously an extremely experienced reliever who has had a ton of success and who has been in those big moments before. But what we're seeing right now from Chad Green is a ton of hard contact and some home runs allowed. And that is exactly what you're trying to avoid when you have such a narrow lead in a hostile environment as it was today. So I would not have gone to Chad Green in that moment, but I also would not have gone to Brendan Little. And I kind of wanted to hear from you if you were as baffled as I was when we saw that Little was the guy that was coming in after Jimmy just threw a handful of pitches or whatever it was to get that one out after Chris Bassett came out of the game.
Yeah, I think the pitcher I would have liked, and Josh named him before we let him go, was I would have actually liked Sandlin in that spot.
Yeah.
Just because Sandlin has the ability to throw to lefties with a splitter, but generally has been pretty effective, all things considered. I think I would have preferred Sandlin, who, again, you know, he hasn't been a Blue Jay for very long, but if you look back to some of the numbers he has put up over, like, since turning the splitter into one of his more heavily used pitches, and this dates back to, like, the beginning of last year in Cleveland, then he is one of the more effective pitchers. And I think he probably tonight was left in maybe in the wrong spot, especially later in the game. It just feels like a lot of the guys were used out of order. But again, like, I still think it goes back to Bassett, right? I mean, if you had left Bassett in and he had finished off that inning cleanly, and I know that's a big if because that's some hindsight, right? But if he had finished off the inning cleanly, you could have given, depending on how because they got the bottom of the order coming up, you could have either left Bassett in there, depending on how much confidence you had in his stuff at that point, even at 92 plus pitches, because that's the number he was taking out at. And then you could have probably saved one reliever. I mean, you also talk about, just generally speaking, they had no choice tonight, but after they pulled Bassett, of course, which was, of course, entirely of their own doing.
Right,
but they absolutely could have just left Bassett in there, saved a reliever, and knowing that you don't have another day off until what, like April 17th? I mean, you need all the arms you can get. I mean, you have one more against the Mets tomorrow. You have four in Fenway against the Red Sox. You have three in Baltimore against the Orioles. Then you come home and play the Braves. And I know the Braves are scuffling, but like, that's still a team you need arms for.
Oh, yes.
So I just, again, it's frustrating, I think, for me and for a lot of fans, I'm sure as well, because it feels eminently avoidable. And they didn't. It feels very self-inflicted.
Yeah, why not just leave Jimmy then, if that is the case? Leave Jimmy in and see what he can do in that spot. But, you know, obviously Little had pitched extremely well prior to tonight. Very efficient in his outings, as well as effective. And that is what you want to see. You never know, obviously, when a guy is going to struggle with command or when a guy is going to be put in a situation that is a little bit trickier, and it happens. And honestly, you know, like I said before, you can't expect these relievers to be perfect every single night. And there were chances, show, to sort of allow them not to be perfect that weren't taken on the other side of the ball.
Yeah, Brendan in Regina, 2-0 game, seventh inning, haven't used a high leverage arm in two games, which is a good point because there was a day off on Thursday, and then yesterday was a 5-0 loss. So Brendan goes on to say, someone please tell me why you won't pitch your best guys. This isn't tryouts. This isn't the tri-league, Josh Donaldson. Live and die nice. On your best guys. No one can complain then. Nathan in Ripley, insane decision to pull Garcia for Little. And this one's from Calm in Halifax. First says, Jules, you nailed it. Re-Barger for Schneider. I was thinking about ABs, but you're right. If he's sitting that well, he'll play. I don't see a use for Schneider right now. He's supposed to pinch hit for a bit of pop, but you can't trust him right now. It's a smart move to make. And then he also says, I also think you need a more reliable lefty. I hope Little has a good year, but I don't want to bring him in against one of the best top threes in the league. And it's true. Like, the status of the left-handed pitchers on this team, who are literally right now just Fluharty and Little, I mean, I felt good about Little going into the season, but not as like the featured lefty in the Tim Mesa type role where he's the guy you bring out every single time, right? So I think Callum from Halifax is onto something. Let's see a quick break here, Jules, And on the other side, go back to the text line, 590-590, name and location. We'll go back to the phone lines as well. Still see some callers on hold, so we'll get to some more callers on the other side. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. The Blue Jays lose 3-2 to the Mets tonight. We'll continue taking your calls and your texts after the break. I'm Sho, that's Jules. You're listening to Blue Jays Talk on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Welcome back to Jays Talk here on the Sportsnet Radio Network. Sho and Julia here with you for another 20 minutes or so. 590-590, name and location. That's the people's text line. It's always open. Standard data and messaging rates may apply. You can shoot us a text that way. A lot of texts we haven't gotten to, so we'll continue reading your texts. We can also keep taking your phone calls. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. We got a couple of callers on hold. Also have a piece of audio to hear from John Schneider. But before we do that, Jules, Blue Jays Talk is brought to you by Bet365. At Bet365, you can bet live in-game on game props, totals, and the money line. Download the app and find out why it's never ordinary at Bet365. 19 plus, play responsibly, Ontario only. If we check out the AL East, a lot of wacky scores today. So the Blue Jays, of course, falling to 5-4 after two straight losses to the Mets. The Yankees thumping the Pirates 10-4. Trent Grisham with a pair of home runs, including a three-run shot in that one. The Orioles, the Blue Jays, not their next opponent, but one of the next opponents in the next week. They'll play them next weekend at Camden Yards. Orioles beating the Royals 8-1. The Rangers, they edged the Rays 6-4. And the Red Sox got rained out. They'll play 2 tomorrow. So the Red Sox stand still at 500. And the Orioles move up a bit. Rays move down a bit. And of course, the Blue Jays drop a game as well. But that's the standings update brought to you here on Jays Talk by Bet365. All right, let's hear from the Blue Jays manager, Jules.
Yep.
He has, of course, just finished his media obligations post-game following this 3-2 loss. Let's hear from the skipper on how things unfolded with the bullpen tonight.
Yeah, I mean, Chris, for one, Chris was great, I thought. You know, kind of picked up where he left off here in New York. And I think having Yimmy there in the seventh, you know, just to kind of clean that up. Wish it was a little bit more efficient. He may go back out. You know, we're asking guys to just, you know, kind of fit it in their spots. And I think late there were pitches that between both Brendan and Nicky, probably they want back, you know, with some walks and some pitches they probably want back. So I wanted Yimmy towards the bottom, you know, trusted Brendan to get in there at the top and did a good job against Pete. You know, the leadoff walk doesn't help, but just kind of wanted to lead with Hoff and thought Little shrug Winker out, to be honest with you, with the check swing. But it's a tough game.
There you go. That's John Schneider. I don't entirely disagree with the Winker moment, because I do think maybe ABS would have shown that he was out. So that's definitely one part of it. But I mean, at the same time, like six straight balls from Brendan Little to Lindor and then to Soto, you can't do that.
Not great.
You just can't do that. And I know he just said they wanted guys to, quote unquote, pitch in their spots. But I mean, again, hindsight is what it is. But there's no real reason you couldn't have, even if you didn't want Sandlin for the eighth, there's no reason you couldn't have had Jimmy Garcia come in for one more out, for example, right? Like you could have easily done that, for example. You could have gotten Jimmy Garcia to face Lindor. And if then things didn't go well, then you bring in, I mean, I guess Little, because Soto's a lefty, but you could have brought in Sandlin. The other part of it, too, is, I mean, Juan Soto is one of the best players, and Lindor is not that far away, but these are some of the best players on planet Earth, right? So there's probably no best solution to deal with these guys. It's just, it could have been managed better for me.
Yeah, you know, you listen to the explanation, and obviously there is reasoning behind the decisions that were made. And obviously we are now talking about it knowing how things unfolded, and if they had unfolded differently, we would be having an entirely different conversation. I understand that. One thing that I will say that I can't really agree with, and this is maybe just me nitpicking the manager, but saying that you wish Jimmy Garcia had been a little bit more efficient, he threw 10 pitches. He could have come back out. We have seen Jimmy Garcia pitch more than one inning. We have seen him surpass 25 pitches, 30 at times. Obviously, you don't want to do that very often, but in that situation, it seems like, especially if you if this is really the most trusted arm out of your pen, not named Jeff Hoffman, it seems like a good idea to maybe let him see a couple more batters in that spot once he, you know, indeed found his command and his stuff and was able to sort of get out of trouble there. Again, we know how it shaped up, and so it's easy for me to sit here and say this, but it just did not seem like a Brandon Little spot right there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I hear the reasoning. I understand. It just did not work out, Joe.
416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Let's go back to the phones, Jules. Let's go to Andrew in London. Andrew, welcome to Jay's Talk. What's on your mind? Andrew, you still there? Andrew, going once. Going twice for Andrew from London. All right, we'll get to someone else. Let's go to, Tom, let's go to Chris in Burnaby on line three. Chris, welcome to Jay's Talk. What's on your mind?
Yeah, a lot of stuff's been echoed, but I just thought the usage of Hoffman was really off. I thought I would have put him in the eighth inning there with the top of the order. Don't you want your best going against the best? And then the ninth inning, like, nothing against Sandlin, but I would have probably put Hoffman in there, too, to have a fresh inning, and then you could start the 10th inning. But, yeah, that's all I have. Thanks, guys.
Hey, no, thanks for holding, Chris, from Burnaby. Thanks for joining us on Jay's Talk. I do think, too, you know, as a part of all of these bullpen conversations, Jules, you know, as we get, I mean, it's still only a handful of games into the season, but as we continue to get deeper into the year, you know, I do think to myself how much, and it's not really guys pitching out of position necessarily, but it's more, how do I put this? Like, no Swanson, no Burr. I think not Burr less so, more Swanson, but not having him and having to rely on some of these guys that you probably wouldn't rely on definitely is something that handicaps you. But at the same time, I mean, you knew from like the middle of spring training, maybe even the beginning of spring training, that Swanson wasn't going to be ready for the beginning of the year.
Right.
And I think that's why, like, when it comes to roster construction, a roster construction standpoint, like, as much as this does fall on John Schneider's usage of the bullpen, I kind of think it also falls on Ross Atkins not necessarily doing enough to shore up the bullpen. Because, and again, I'm not saying they had to go out and spend on every remaining reliever. I mean, that would have been fun, but there were other ways of addressing the bullpen deficiencies. Because again, I said this to you a million times. Last year, the Blue Jays had not just a bad bullpen. They had a historically bad bullpen, right? So even if last year, for a team that won 74 games, even if you had just an all right normal bullpen, right? Not even a good bullpen, just a mediocre to okay bullpen, you probably win like five more games essentially. And I know they probably still wouldn't, they wouldn't have made the playoffs with 79 or 80 wins versus what, 86 wins or whatever it took to make the wild card. But I mean, it just feels like maybe of all of the aspects of this team, and that was something I was a little concerned about in the spring, and now here we are.
For sure. And especially when you have your rotation giving you as many good innings as it is right now, being able to keep that going is just such a crucial part of what the Blue Jays are trying to do. Obviously, this bullpen is better than it was last year, so there's no question about it. But you look at the way that these arms are being deployed right now, and you kind of do, you can't help but wonder, are they missing one piece? And sure, that piece can be Eric Swanson, but we have also seen how much a difference it makes to have depth, to have more guys available than you may actually need. And the Blue Jays don't have that right now. If Eric Swanson is down for a little longer than expected, then what does that mean for this bullpen? And does it mean that now the Blue Jays will have to maybe scramble and work a trade or something along those lines to shore that up and remain competitive? Because it is pretty heartbreaking to see just how much effort these starters are putting in right now to keep the Blue Jays in games, even when the offense is not going. And obviously you trust these guys, you trust these guys out of the pen, but you may be missing one piece. And I don't want to be a downer about Swanson, but when he came back last year, he didn't look like Eric Swanson. He actually had to go to AAA and figure his stuff out. And so when he comes back this time, the hope and the trust is that he will be, you know, picked right back up where he left off. But there is also a chance that you're going to see a little bit of reacclimation process, a little bit of a you know, maybe a learning curve for Swanson until he gets back to the Erik Swanson that we have seen with the Blue Jays in times past. So I would agree with that, Joe. I think that there is one piece that is missing there beyond Erik Swanson being injured. And sure, Ryan Burr to a lesser extent. It's just there was time, there was opportunity, and this may be one that comes back to bite the Blue Jays.
Shane in Brockville saying, Show, let's be honest, we're running a $260 million payroll. This is what we had running out there on a nightly basis. Brutal asset management. There's another one kind of similar. David from Oakville. But again, to echo our friend Kevin Barker, you're floating a $240 million payroll. Why are the Littles and Fluharties coming in for high leverage? Man alive. That was the quote from David in Oakville. Not my best Barker impression. But the Blue Jays definitely, I think, when you're spending that much money to address issues, it feels like, and again, I said this before last year, the issue is not that they didn't spend money, it's that they didn't necessarily spend money wisely.
Right.
And it did feel like this year they had spent money a little more wisely. But so far also in the early goings of the season, it feels like a lot of the spaces you did see them spend money on, maybe outside of Jeff Hoffman, because I know he gives up the game losing run tonight, but I think he's been, like, he's given the back end of the bullpen a little bit of an extra dimension, although, again, this is not the game to talk about that necessarily. But apart from Hoffman, I mean, you haven't really seen the returns on an Anthony Santander. You have seen pretty much no returns on Max Scherzer. So, I mean, like, the best returns you're getting are on a trade when it comes to Sandlin / Jimenez, right? Yeah. And, I mean, that you're not going to get the perfect returns from that literally every single time out, but early on, the offseason additions have not necessarily been the difference makers, right? I mean, I think the difference makers have been guys like Alan Roden and Bo getting back to the guy he was before and so on. So, yeah, I think there are holes, absolutely, even if you are running out, like, the fifth or sixth highest payroll in Major League Baseball. Let's get to one more caller, Jules. 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, *590 on your cell. Pat in East York joining us here on Jays Talk. Pat, what's up?
Guys, I gotta tell you, I'm looking at the bullpen. I know we just had a caller talk about this, but I understand how hard it is to find a four hitter, and we got Jimenez, and he's filling in the spots. But when I look at what we're bringing in out of the pen, like even last night with Gausman leaving the game and Fluharty coming in, it's like, how is this not a huge failure by the front office to not be bringing in bombastic shutdown closers? These, like, finding middle relievers who can end the game, who can hold innings. These aren't expensive tickets in the league. When you look at what we're spending, it's blowing my mind as a Jays fan that, you know, this isn't where we're spending our money. I look at our outfield, our infield. We got Ernie at third base. We've got a rookie in right field. We're saving money all over the place. How are we still going middle innings, middle late inning appearances out of the bullpen when there are lots of people available in the league that we could have been going after? It's killing me.
Hey, Pat, I appreciate the call, man. Thank you for joining us here on Jays Talk. I mean, we were just talking about the roster management, asset management aspect of the bullpen. I do think too, Julia, I mean, like, I've said this to you before, but I think the easy is a tough word to throw when you lose a game like that, like tonight. But I do think of the pieces of a team that are easiest to fix on the fly, I do believe the bullpen might be the easiest one to fix on the fly. If you only need like one or two arms, right? And I do believe with the Blue Jays, I'm not saying you're trading Alan Roden by any means, but if you do have a Barger, if you do have, I'm not sure that, I'm not sure that Arjun Namala is the guy you want to be trading necessarily, because I think he could be something going down in the future. I mean, he's also what, like 19 or 20 or 20 or 21 or whatever it is. So he's a little younger for me to trade, but even, and maybe Aralvis Martinez is not the guy either, but you know, when it comes to the Leo Jimenez's of the world and Addison Barger's of the world, and I'm more bullish these days on Wagner and Roden, so I probably would exempt them. But I guess my point is, much like Horwitz, and I know part of that trade was because the Guardians were essentially dumping Jimenez's salary, but I think there are ways to improve the bullpen without giving up your top end prospects, because you don't need to go out and get another Jeff Hoffman. You just need to go out and get someone to hold runs in the sixth and seventh 100%. Innings, essentially. And I mean, in theory, there are a lot of those kinds of guys, to Pat's point.
Yeah, yeah, there are. And as the season progresses and we see the separation, just to get some clarity on who's actually competing for a postseason spot, who is not, those relief arms are the first ones to become available. And those are usually the first dominoes to fall around trade deadline and things of the sort. That was certainly the case for the Blue Jays on the other side of it last year. And so there should be guys that are made available relatively soon here. The thing is, show that the Blue Jays need to remain competitive long enough to make a move for those guys. Yeah. And when you're already at this point in the season, giving up leads this late and failing to capitalize on opportunities when they show up, that is going to make it a lot harder to position yourself as a buyer at the trade deadline or as a buyer in June or whenever it may be. So it's a tough ask, but it is about, you know, finding ways to win these games now so that the front office sees some justification in going out and making those moves. It's a weird one because it's a chicken or egg situation in many ways, show. But the fact of the matter is that if the Blue Jays, you know, if this road trip is going to be big, obviously it's not going to be the be all end all, but it's a big road trip in order to kind of figure out what you actually have with the Blue Jays. The holes are clear and they're starting to come in and we can see it. But if they can remain competitive, then that should give them a chance to at least address those weaknesses. Until then, it's going to be a lot of fans at the edge of their seats every single night.
We talked a lot about the bullpen tonight, and I do think as well, when it comes to the power, again, something you brought up earlier, but let's face it, the Blue Jays need to not be walking the tightrope so much, and the offense needs to help them out with that. I mean, maybe the bullpen decisions would have looked different. Maybe Bassett would have stayed in if it hadn't been a runner on with just a 2-run lead up to nothing, essentially. So, you gotta look at the offense as well for some solutions, not only what can you do with the bullpen. I mean, the Blue Jays are tied with four other teams for the fewest home runs in the league at 5.
Oh, and, I did not know that. Yeah, I did not look that up.
It's suboptimal, as they say, Jules. Yeah. So you need more power. You need more runs scored, but I think you just need more power generally, and a lot of that comes via the long ball. You know, one guy who could hit a couple more home runs is Vladimir Guerrero Jr. This is where I wanted to wrap up with you before we say goodbye. Nothing official yet on an extension for Vladimir Guerrero Jr., but a lot of smoke today from a variety of people about how the team, it's like essentially close to being a done deal with Vladdy. I mean, this is from Yansen Pujols earlier this afternoon. People close to the situation are telling me this: Vladimir Guerrero Jr. and the Toronto Blue Jays have made a lot of progress towards a $500 million deal. Time frame, 14 years. The announcement could be done soon. Looks like Vladdy Jr. is staying in Toronto long term. Mike Rodriguez yesterday saying, breaking news, according to my sources, Vladdy Jr. and the Blue Jays are close to an extension agreement of more than $500 million. And today, he said, as I said yesterday, the deal is almost closed. Hector Gomez, who, you know, gotten some things wrong, gotten some things right. he said today as well, according to a person close to Vladdy, the Blue Jays could make the official announcement of the extension this weekend. And then someone had replied to him and like quote-tweeted one of his tweets and said, here's what's being thrown around, 14 years, $500 million. And then he replied to that and said, money and years have been agreed to, just working out the finer details. But, I mean, what do you think? I mean, if it ends up being $500 million, and again, this is not official, we're still waiting from a Passan or Rosenthal, a Heyman, or someone to confirm this, but or the team, sometimes that comes as well. But what do you think? I mean, if it ends up being $500 million in present-day value with little or no deferred money and ends up being, you know, 45-plus a year for Vladdy, I mean, how do you think fans are going to react?
Oh, I think fans are going to react very well. I
think so, eh? I think it'll be split. I do think so.
I don't think that the Blue Jays even have a choice at this point.
Okay.
But to sign Vladimir Guerrero Jr. for $500 million. It's tough, but it's true. And the fact is that move alone, show, it just opens up so much in terms of competitive window for this team and what it is that it is trying to do here. Takes off so much pressure from this season, allows a ton of guys to breathe easy. It would definitely allow, in my mind, Vladdy to breathe a little bit easy and not have to be concerned about that or have that in the back of his mind every time he steps up to the plate, which, you know, it could do wonders for his game, in my opinion. we have seen just how different things look with Vladdy when he is clearly off his game and when he has something on his mind, and then when he is just loose and playing with joy in the way that he likes to go about his day. There's a very clear difference, and I believe that that could free up some mental space for Vladdy. Let's just put it like that. But listen, show if Vladdy and Bo, and Bo is obviously a different conversation,
for
but
sure. Yeah.
If these guys walk for nothing, it's that would infuriate the fan base, I would imagine.
I think so, yeah, for sure.
Now, keeping Vladdy in kind of signing him to a deal of this magnitude, I think it's just, it's what you have to do, especially when you look at that free agent class. There aren't a ton of power hitters
it's
available.
Kyle Tucker, Vladdy, and like that's it. Pretty
and
much.
That's it. And yeah. And that matters too, right, Cho? It matters too. There's some times where the market is very, very favorable for starting pitchers. You have one or two available, and those guys are going to get record deals just out of the sheer fact that there is just, it's a scarce position in the market at the moment. And so that's just where we are. This deal didn't get done sooner. It needs to happen now. Otherwise, this front office will have nothing to show for it. And that is something that I believe will actually infuriate this fan base.
I just think my only, it's not really a concern, but my only thing with Vladdy getting paid a boatload of money is then he will have to produce like someone getting paid
yes.
a boatload of money, right? I mean, look, I don't want to heap too much criticism on him tonight of all nights. I mean, the team scored two runs and he scored one of those two runs, right? The guy had five ABs, he had two hits, and including an RBI. Bo, who we didn't spend any time on tonight. I mean, Bo's hitting .316 after getting three hits, including a double tonight and the RBI double. So Bo's been phenomenal, yeah. And he's been phenomenal pretty much all year so far. And again, very small sample size, but Vladdy hitting .286. You just need more power to go with that. And again, I mean, if he gets $500 million in present day value,
yeah.
I mean, he's going to get paid in terms of present day value. He's getting paid more than Otani. He'd be getting paid more than Judge. So, and I mean, again, I know it's sometimes an unfair comparison, but if you're getting paid that much money and you're getting paid more than guys who are hitting home runs, it feels like every third AB, then you kind of got to produce like those guys. It's maybe that's not fair, but that's the reality of the situation.
For sure. And with Vladdy, the one thing that I would say just in defense of his lack of power is that the power always seems to lag behind a little bit early on in the season. And then he just finds it and never looks back. So that is the expectation at this point. It's kind of like looking at Anthony Santander, who again looked not so great today, and looking at the OPS for April and then for May onward. And it's like kind of like, okay, well, this is who you are as a hitter, and this is what we know we can expect from you. And there's still obviously a ton of value in having a guy like that. So that's the one thing I will say. But any deal of this magnitude, show, comes with risks, is what I would say. There's no deal that is worth that amount of money that doesn't come at a risk. I don't know. I think that Vladdy would be the guy to do it. So we'll see. Definitely shaping up to be an interesting weekend with all the rumors flying around.
We'll hope for no rain delays tomorrow. We'll also hope for some news one way or another regarding the contract of one Vladimir Guerrero Jr. That's Julia Kreutz. I'm Show Ali. You've been listening to Blue Jays Baseball, brought to you by the local family-owned Crown Us Control Centers in Head of St. Margaret's Bay and Hammonds Plains, Nova Scotia. Crown is proud to be Canadian-owned and operated since 1986. Protect your vehicle from rust today at your local Crown Us Control Center or visit crown.com. Crown, Canada's number one rust protection. For Julia Kreutz, Ben Schulman, Chris LaRue, Tom Young, Nick Blackmore, I'm Show Ali. That does it for us. We are out of here. We'll be back tomorrow. But a bow on this series, B&B will be back on Monday, barring no rain delays in Boston, for the Red Sox series. Have a great rest of your Saturday night, everyone. We'll talk to you later.